Good morning and welcome to the May 2nd, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everybody for participating this morning and remind you to please mute your screens and silence any electronic devices that you have with you today if you are unmuted. Today's meeting is a study and business session with the study session starting this morning at 10 a.m. and the afternoon business session starting at 1 p.m. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand either physically or electronically that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today, we have all five commissioners present, Manager Kirk Hudson, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Rebecca Newman, Clerk of the Board. At this time, would you please join Marianne Wood in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Good morning, everyone. My name is Marianne Wood, and I am out here at Central Maintenance, and I am the System Support Coordinator. I am also the Maximo Administrator for all of Generation, so many of you know me. When you have a Maximo question, that's when I'll hear from you. This morning, I would like to talk a little bit about the STAR method, which means STAR, stop, think, act, and review. Trying to save time or rushing through a task when things are busy might seem like the right thing to do. However, the seemingly safe move may lead to an unintentional error. It's a good idea to take a few seconds and focus on the task at hand using the STAR safety behavior, which is stop, think, and review. Next slide, please. Everyone can be a STAR worker. Stop, pause, and focus on the task at hand. Think about what you're about to do and plan your actions. Act, complete the task or action as planned. Review, after the activity, consider any learning points. What are your lessons learned? Next slide, please. Practice using the safety behavior STAR, which is stop, think, act, and review. It takes just a few seconds, and it's a simple way you can help make your workplace safer for yourself and your colleagues. Thank you, everyone, and have a good, safe day.
Great. Thank you, Marianne, always for the words of wisdom on safety. Any questions for Marianne? We had a nice visit before the meeting. I was sharing with Marianne that I was out at Central Maintenance and so impressed with the building out there. And for those of you who haven't been able to get out there, it's lovely to see the old pieces of insulators and water wheels and bearing bushings that they've used for portals in the wall. And it really is a delightful place to work. So, Marianne, thanks for joining us today and sharing a safety minute with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice having you today. Okay. So no resolutions have been recommended for the consent agenda today by staff. For the public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. Do I hear any such request or additions and changes to the agenda from commissioners today? Hearing none, our agenda stands. Okay. So at this time, I will turn this over to Kirk for our quarterly district performance plan status update.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. This morning, we are going to go through the first quarter district performance plan results. We'll be focusing on just the exceptions. If anything is on track, we won't be reporting on it. You're always welcome to take any item and ask any questions on the performance plan, regardless of the status. So with that, we're going to start with Brett Bickford.
Brett, you're on mute. You look good talking, though.
All right. Good morning, Brett Bickford, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. Our first item to review is the Rocky Reach Discovery Center. We completed the K-12 teacher training, and that specifically was related to electricity production. And that was completed February 17th, and 31 teachers were trained. What's kind of really exciting about this is when I first saw this topic, I thought it might just be teachers in the Wenatchee Valley, but it's really statewide. Just to name a few, there were 10 teachers from Kennewick, 2 from Lake Stevens, 1 from Monroe, 1 from Omak, 2 from Pasco, 1 from Portland, 2 from Vancouver, 1 from White Sama, and the rest were from the local area. So that's really neat to see that we're getting out there and training kind of statewide on this different activity. Any questions?
Good morning, commissioners. This is Lindsay Mons, Business Manager and Customer Utilities, sitting in for John Stoll today. The next item here is our electric service reliability safety metric. Our result for Q1 or through Q1 was 70.6 minutes. This is a target that we look at on an annual rolling 12-month basis. And as a reminder, what this means is that over the course of a year, each of our customers, on average, would have experienced an outage lasting 70.6 minutes. This is above our target of 45 minutes per customer due to the high snow and winds in the last 6 months, as well as last summer's non-reclose fire mitigation efforts. I would note, however, this is an improvement over our 2021 calendar year, which was 83.7 minutes. So we're working on bringing that number down.
The next one is Unit C6 at Rocky Reach. We had planned to complete that at the end of March on the 31st. Central Maintenance is doing this work for us. We had about a two-week delay on completing assembling the unit due to difficulties getting our Kaplan pipe to thread into the crosshead. This is a real challenge. If you can imagine turning the lights off and trying to thread a bolt into a hole, or a cruiser trying to thread an 8-inch pipe 60 feet down in the dark. Unfortunately, they got it stuck, so they had to disassemble, and it took an extra 2 weeks. But C6 is now back in service and operating just fine. Our next one is Unit C5, and that one is following the work related to C6. So because C6 was late, it also unfortunately is looks like C5 is going to trend into early January of 2023. The next one is Unit B5 at Rock Island, and this is a project that we still have Andres working on for us. This unit has been trailing significantly late due to parts and, in particular, thrust bearing components from a sub-supplier of Andres' Kingsbury. With supply chain issues, this is one of the major ones. These parts were actually over a year late. But we do have them now. Our crews stepped up and actually saved 6 weeks on the schedule by taking the parts from Kingsbury, assembling them ourselves, and then turning them over to Andres. So we're on track to finish later this summer.
Good morning, commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director for District Services. I've got the next one. The next one speaks to our 2023 legislative priorities. We had this marked as caution just because we thought it might be difficult to fill Sean Siemens' position. But we, as you recently heard, we did have now filled that with Kelly Scott. We're really excited to have her on board. And so I think this will be back on track, and we can take the caution off next time, hopefully. And then regarding our engagement with stakeholders and the Tri-Commission specifically, we'll have a Tri-Commission meeting in mid-summer. And then again in the fall, where we typically finalize our legislative priorities for the upcoming session.
This is Kirk again. I've got the next item at the bottom of page 3. This is our capital spending target. We have a target of 80%. We are currently through the first quarter at 62%, so below where we want to be.
This is Lindsay. The next item is noting completion of the implementation of our system impact fees on April 1st. These fees were put in place as part of the strategic plan, creating a standardized proportional share of station and transmission cost on the electric side, as well as supporting system sustainability on the water and wastewater side.
We have Rosario with us. Okay, I'm not seeing her. I'll go ahead and take this. This is, we had a goal to complete the collective bargaining agreement, to reach a tentative agreement by March 31st, and that was accomplished. Ian, we can barely hear you.
Can you hear me now?
A little bit better if you can. It's still hard to hear. You want to try again?
I got to get my speaker.
There you go. Maybe. Okay, why don't we skip Ian? We'll come back to him. Rhonda, are you there?
I am.
Okay.
Okay, good morning, Commissioners. Rhonda Wilkinson, Director of Safety and HPI. So number 2, our senior team site safety visits. So even though we are in the yellow, we do anticipate reaching our six-month
okay,
target.
Is that better?
Yeah, stand by, Ian. We'll come back to you.
Okay.
All right. So we do anticipate reaching our six-month target of 16 by the end of June. So that was for the number 2. Number 6 is completing our HPI tools training. So we currently are in the yellow because we are at the very beginning stages of our training, but we are on track with our training schedule that we've put in place. And then number 7, executing on our top quartile safety action plan. Again, we're at the beginning stages, so our percent complete is somewhat low, but we are, again, on track to complete all of the ergonomic assessments, our noise evaluations, and our hearing protection fit testing by the end of December.
Rhonda, this is Steve. Can I ask you a question for a minute?
Sure.
When you talk about HPI tools training, can you explain that a little bit to me for a minute?
Sure. So the tools training, so basically where we've gone with the HPI training is because we it was more of a higher level conceptual, you know, of okay. HPI. And so what we're trying to get is to actually use the tools themselves, what we can do with the tools of HPI and how we can implement those into our everyday work, what we're performing.
Great.
So it's, yeah, so it's HPI tools there.
Not physical tools, but HPI.
Oh, no. HPI, okay. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Sure thing.
Okay, thanks, Rhonda. Let's go back to Objective 5. We'll catch you in there. And then, Ian, you can just continue on Objective 7 when you're done there.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you. Apologize that, Commissioners. Ian Fitzgerald, Chief Technology Officer.
going back into the business process and operational objectives. This is concerning the C2M2 model, or the cybersecurity capability maturity model. We're currently on caution on this because the standard that was released in summer of 2021 was supposed to be updated this first quarter. We had not seen that actually until last week. So that standard update has come out last week. Next quarter, this will be actually completed. And so we're no longer in a caution state. We believe that we'll be able to assess this and properly complete it with targets remaining for the rest of this year. Then having the next three items, the field workforce management and the customer engagement projects are both at caution. We were actually able to complete contract with AIM Consulting. They are a project management, technology project management group that we were able to get a contract with. Both of those project managers were on staff as of 2 weeks ago and helping us with these projects. They're back now on track. We are a little bit behind, and we're hoping to get these completed by the end of November 1st with an RFP. So I'm hoping the next quarter to put these back on track, and I'll have better information in the next quarter. In addition, we actually have two project management positions open on the PMO office in the new reorg. That is looking much better than what was expected. We actually have three very well-qualified candidates in interviews right now and expect to have two of those hired within the next month. And then lastly, the enhanced customer offering, the public outreach portal, that project was completed before the end of March. However, the group internally has discussed, because we have not had a lot of outages this year, to hold off on announcing it to the public until June. So even though the public outreach portal is in the wild, it is in production and can be accessed from the internet, it's currently not being made public, at least a public announcement, until June timeframe.
Good morning, Commissioners. Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer, taking us to page 8. We have a task to modernize our reporting and analytical tools in our business intelligence and data analytics program. We are lagging behind in our internal timelines to meet that target by the end of the year, due primarily to being down one position that we've been in recruiting phase for over a year. It's one of those hard-to-find technology analyst positions, so we're on about plan three on different approaches to trying to recruit a backfill for that position. There's a little glimmer of positivity in the last technique we've been trying, where we have been using an external recruiter. So we are hopeful to get the position backfilled in the next few months. But as long as the position is open, we expect to be at a slower pace than we would be to accomplish this goal. So it will likely stay red as long as the position is open.
Morning, Commissioners. Bob Shane, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. I have number 7 on the item, which is our portal replacement. We are having some difficulties in getting that project to where we want it to be, although we're making a lot of progress. We do think we're going to have the startup date slip a little bit, primarily for a couple of reasons. One being our project manager, who is facilitating the coordination and the final development of that, has left the district, and so we're short staff on that right now. The other one is just, it's a pretty complicated application that we're trying to get all the different elements of it down to a science, so that when we do go live, it'll meet our expectations. So it's just taking a little bit longer, but we're very comfortable and confident we'll have that portal running by midsummer this year and in use.
I'm going to go ahead and take the next one, too. I know Sean is out of town and trying to get on a plane and call in off and on today, but this one was related to the battery system contract that we put out to bid, and this one we'll come back and circle back with the board on just in terms of we're seeing pricing change significantly with battery storage. So that one is caution.
Commissioners, Bob Shane again on item one there on the PPB premises pass. We did not hit our target this year or this quarter, sorry, for 238 premises. 92 is what we hit. The biggest reason for that is delayed winter weather, which is fairly common in the first quarter of being in the challenge for us to get the splicing and the construction completed. We're very comfortable and confident, again, we'll have that entire chump stick lit by the end of Q2. To give you the latest update right now, portion of it is lit now and serving customers up to chump stick. The second half is in the splicing stages, and we'll bring premises lit to those customers by the end of Q2.
Commissioners, I have the final one. This is in regard to the redevelopment of our Fifth Street campus. We've been working closely with the regional port. That RFP has now been issued and was issued in accordance with our target time frame. The RFP deadline is May 16th. There are 13 plan holders currently, so we've had a lot of interest in this property from the development community. We look forward to giving you more updates after that closes and after we begin the evaluation process with the port and our other partners. Thank you.
So that concludes the exception items first quarter. We've got 74, almost 75% that are on track after the first quarter, and got approximately 80% that are on track for the total completion. Any questions on any of those exception items or any others that are on the performance plan? Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Looks like we can go ahead and move on to our quarterly electrical load growth update, Kurt.
Actually, we're going to go to the financial report, if that's okay.
I'm jumping ahead. Sorry, Kelly.
That's okay. With us is Mark Mullins,
Mark. Yeah.
Dave Nelson, and Heather Ireland.
Great. Thank you, Kirk, and good morning, commissioners. My name is Mark Mullins, Director, Enterprise Planning, Risk, and Analytics. As Kirk mentioned, Dave Nelson, Manager, Strategic Financial Planning, and Heather Ireland, our Directory over Treasury, is going to be joining us today for this presentation. This is our quarterly financial review for quarter ended March 31st, 2022. This presentation does support a number of resolutions associated with our district long-range financial policies, our business line financial policies, our investment policy, as well as the board's balanced scorecard objective of maintaining a strong financial stewardship. So today I'll cover the financial highlights, and then I'll turn it over to Dave for the first quarter results. I'll turn it over to Dave, and he's going to give you an insight on the forecast as well as a five-year look ahead. And then we're going to turn it over to Heather to give you some insights on the investment report, but also some of the things that we've been hearing about in the press with rising interest rates and the impact on our investment portfolio and debt portfolio. So she's going to provide some insight on that. And then we'll turn it back over to Dave, and he'll leave you with some key messages. This is an update only, no action required today, but we do have additional information in the back in the appendix that we won't plan on covering, but certainly open for questions if needed. So looking at our Q1 2022 key highlights, bottom line results through Q1 better than budget by $17 million. We do have some primary drivers lagging slightly on with lower operating costs, but we do have higher revenue associated with retained surplus proceeds from our cost-based contract, and those are primary drivers for our strong year-to-date results. From a forecast perspective, also better than budget, forecasted to be at $17 million better. Higher operating revenues are expected to continue for the year. We do have a significant capital and O&M projects that are currently underway, so we do plan on heavy spending throughout the remainder of the year with operations and service center, as well as Rock Island being two of the primary drivers there. I would also like to note another item in the news is inflation. And what we're seeing, at least through 2022, is those inflation impacts are manageable for what we're seeing for 2022, both year-to-date, but also in the forecast for 2022. We will plan on doing a deeper dive once we get into the annual five-year business planning process, but it's something that we're carefully monitoring because we want to have the best reflection in our long-term forecast of what we anticipate to come. So we'll do a deeper dive when we get into the business planning process and, of course, the budgeting cycle as well. But at this point, we see 2022 as being manageable. From a financial metrics perspective, we are meeting our targets through the five-year planning horizon. Consistent with prior presentations, we do expect to borrow around 2023. Of course, that's contingent on the forecast assumptions that we have in there. And the borrowing would help us to fund a portion of our significant capital spending program. So at this time, through these results, we're planning on staying the course with a 2020 through 2024 strategic objective. So from an income statement, looking at revenue, service revenue in particular, $4 million below budget year to date, and that's primarily due to the volume for the off-system end-use sale is at about 83% of budget, and we also have a lower market-based price for the contractual component related market prices. Then from a local perspective, our HDL load growth is coming in at about coming in, I think, about 94%, if I'm not mistaken. But these lower wholesale prices are impacting that off-system end-use sale. However, on the opposite side of that, we do have some offsets with respect to our net wholesale revenue being about $5 million above budget with the higher energy production due to higher stream flow conditions are impacting that. But we also have the benefit of lower market prices versus budget as we manage our portfolio and contracts from a purchase power perspective. So you have two offsetting components there. From a hydro contract revenue perspective, $2 million above budget year to date. We did retain $8 million of surplus proceeds from our cost-based contract, and that's partially offset by a lower cost-based revenue, as our hydro production costs are about 80% year-to-date. And other operating revenue, about $1 million above budget, with the higher prices and volatility in the market. The variable portion of our real-time agreement is showing some benefit versus budget as well. And for the year, we're forecasting to be about $16 million above budget for the year at this point in time. On the expense side, operating expenses year-to-date are $12 million below budget with primary drivers at the hydro O&M at this point in time, but we are expecting to catch up as we move through the course of the year. On the non-operating net expense, that's right in line with budget year-to-date with some higher customer line extension contributions, but overall expected to catch up just below budget for the year. From a bottom line perspective, $34 million year to date, $17 million better than budget, with primary drivers around higher revenue, as well as the retained surplus proceeds associated with our cost-based contract, and then lower expenses. From a bottom line forecast, $79 million for the year, $17 million better than budget. From a balance sheet perspective, looking at capital, we had a $30 million budget through year-to-date, and we've spent $19 million, so about $11 million below budget, so a little bit lagging in spending. We do have some capital forecast adjustments, with the primary driver being operations and service center, as we have the project schedules are impacted as we continue to manage priorities as well. For the total capital forecast, currently forecasted to be $179 million, about 91% of budget, so some significant spending as we move through the course of the year. From a cash perspective, ending the quarter at $509 million, increased by $1 million from year end. This is attributable to our positive bottom line, but also we are continuing to leverage that cash to spend for capital and reduction of our payables. And we do have significant capital spending, of course, planned for the course of the year, so we are planning on continuing to leverage that cash. A year-end cash balance at $384, although we are drawing that down to manage our capital spending and other items, that is $27 million better than budget at this point in time. From a debt perspective, just under $400 million for the Q1 debt balance. We do have planned reductions of $47 million in 2022, $35 million, which is net our net scheduled payments. And then we also have $12 million, which is representing a six-month accelerated payment to help level off some of our debt service coverage ratios. And then from a year-end perspective, expected to be at $349 million, which is right in line with budget, down $47 million from where we ended up at the beginning of the year. So with that, unless there's any questions, I will turn this over to Dave, and he can get into some of the more details.
Mark, I have a quick question for you, if I can.
Go ahead, Gary.
Thank you, Steve. Mark, do you happen to know the approximate annual interest expense that we're paying for this year? I'm referring just to our debt.
I think as we get in, I don't have that right at my fingertips. We have Heather Ireland on the phone, so she may be able to provide a little bit more detailed insight, which we could probably do either now or as we get into that slide a little bit later in the presentation.
It's fine. Later on is fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning, Commissioners. This is Dave Nelson. Oh, is there an additional question? Okay.
Go ahead, Dave.
The manager of Strategic Financial Planning. As you can see, this slide is the 2022 forecast for the full year. As you can see, a bottom line of $79 million is forecasted, $17 million better than budget. Primary drivers there are the positive results we've seen year-to-date, the net wholesale revenue, with additional improvements based on strong forecasted prices for the rest of the year, and also the hydro long-term contract revenue, where we've seen the retained surplus proceeds and expect to have a pretty balanced results for the remainder of the year, with forecasted spending increasing back up closer to our projected budget, resulting in an overall bottom line of $79 million for the year. This is a breakdown by business line of that $79 million. We have the integrated electric, which, as you would expect, mirrors the overall district results based on those strong results in revenues. For fiber and telecom, we're seeing a somewhat larger loss forecasted than budget. That's based on some updated rate changes that were made, as well as the slightly
bigger. Sorry, about that.
Getting a little bit of feedback from somebody. Okay, sorry. From the water system, we're seeing results a little bit better forecast for the year. Revenues and expenses are in line with budget, but we're expecting slightly higher contributions for new additions to the system. Wastewater system, expecting a slightly smaller loss due to lower operating expenses forecasted. The interest system eliminations are due to the fiber distribution make-ready work. And the combined bottom line is $79 million forecasted for the year. For capital expenditures, first three columns representing the first quarter, as Mark mentioned, we're lagging spending really overall in the 62% range here year to date. Primary drivers from a dollar standpoint on that are Rock Island modernization and then the Internal Services Operations Service Center. For the full year results, expecting to catch up a bit to 91%, $179 million forecasted. And the system forecasting slightly under budget or less than 90%. Rocky Reach due to a spillway modernization electrical upgrade that's been pushed out to 2023. Lake Chelan at 67% due to the auto closure date that's been pushed out to 2023 and 2024. And the Internal Services Center at 83% just due to the delays in the Operations and Service Center completion into 2023. Okay, looking at our cash flow detail year to date, we have the $34 million in bottom line results for the first quarter. We add back non-cash items of depreciation and amortization of $13 million, add about $4 million in some non-cash revenue items related to our long-term contracts where we receive some upfront payments and then recognize that income over the life of the contract. For overall $43 million in funds earned from operations, we had capital project expenditures of $19 million, $23 million in other miscellaneous impacts, primarily accounts payable, paying down some accruals that were done at year-end for an estimated use of funds of $42 million. The $1 million addition to cash reserves for the quarter, bringing us to $509 million at the end of the quarter. And then a breakdown of that $509 million, unrestricted funds have increased quite a bit from the end of the year, as most of the funds we've been using are in the restricted categories. The electric rate support fund remains at $2 million. That fund is based on an annual addition, so we won't see any change until the fourth quarter. The headquarters strategic service center strategic facilities fund remains at $50 million. We do anticipate beginning to draw down those funds in the remainder of the year and in 2023 as the facility is completed. And Treasury, I believe, will be coming to talk to the board about that and request the board's approval to make that change later this year. We have the restricted funds for just a couple more things on that slide. The restricted funds for the hydro capital debt, as you can see, is being paid down or drawn down as we are moving forward with our capital plans. Overall liquidity that we measure our policy against remains the same at 415 for the quarter. And then relatively minor changes in our restricted funds below that. As you can see, the main one may be the construction funds being drawn down from the 2020 bonds to $8 million remaining as of the end of the quarter. Go to the next slide now. Thanks, Rebecca. So looking at our quarterly reporting requirements over the next 5 years, we are forecasting meeting all of our financial policy targets. As you can see, we do have some areas where we have some yellow showing up as we expect to draw down our cash closer to our metrics and begin to borrow, forecasted to begin in 2023. So our days cash on hand metric is very close to our forecast, as that kind of drives our borrowing needs related to our capital improvements plan. Go to the next slide.
Dave, a question on that last one?
Yes, sure.
That looking at the cash on hand and our potential need for borrowing, the yellow numbers, is that reflective of what we will have with or without borrowing?
These are reflective with borrowing. So we forecast our needs and we forecast the borrowing we would need in order to maintain our financial targets. So as you can see, the day's cash on hand and liquidity kind of draw down to that balance and then remain fairly stable as we move forward because we're just forecasting the borrowing we need to maintain those targets and fund our capital plans over time.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so the yellow, again, the yellow does mean we're meeting the target. It's just that we're within 10% of the metric. And so with those liquidity targets, we would expect that we would have quite a bit of yellow as we move forward because we don't anticipate having much excess cash on hand moving forward.
Dave, I think we've got another question.
Yeah.
Dennis, was that you?
Yes, please. Dave, before we move on, is there kind of a back of the envelope sum of what we may be anticipating in terms of amount borrowed in the future?
Yeah, we do have those figures, and I don't have them right in front of me right now. I believe, it's in the, for 2023, I believe our latest forecast had us in about the $30 million range. When we go to borrow, we would do a more detailed plan, and that would be the
right.
We would take a look at our overall needs. For our forecast purposes, we just balance our needs with what is forecasted to be needing. And so we would look at maybe a longer period of time and say, do the borrowing for some period of time based on our forecasted needs. And so we may borrow in larger amounts than that in order to fund that for a longer period of time. But for 2023,
okay. Yeah.
it's not a large amount at this point in time.
Okay. So there may be then subsequent years of borrowing, but at a very specific targeted, perhaps related to a specific capital expenditure.
Right. We look at our overall capital plan, and we expect to have borrowing over the next 3 years or so. Our forecast right now is showing some borrowing during that time frame, and we would look at the overall treasury. We look take a hard look at what we really need and our forecasts and borrow what we need to maintain our financial strength and be able to proceed with our capital plan during that time.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. If we can move to the next slide. Looking at our individual business line financial policies, we had adopted some targets for our forecast for 2024 as these systems continue to work to meet their financial self-sustaining targets. And as you can see, we've got some yellow, which means they are forecasting meeting those targets. They're within 10%. On the two red items, the cash reserves for water and the debt service for wastewater, those targets were set under different planning assumptions, and we're working through the debt plan for those systems, and we expect that those would be updated and would be changed based on our updated plans as we move forward. Okay, I'm going to turn over the next slide to Heather Ireland, our treasurer, to talk about the quarterly investment report and other items.
Thanks, Dave. Good morning, commissioners. This morning I have the opportunity to discuss with you our quarterly investment update, which is a part of our requirement under our district banking and investment policy. To start off, I just wanted to note that we are currently meeting all of our policy objectives. Those include safety, liquidity, return on investment, diversification, and maturity length, all things that we monitor regularly in our portfolio. A few items to note is that we did have a slight decline in our average invested book value in Q1. Our average invested book value was just over $500 million, and that was anticipated based on the district's continuing capital spending program. We also had a slight decline in the district yield. For Q1, it averaged 2.07%. I wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on with interest rates in the current market environment, as I'm sure everybody's heard things in the news and kind of aware from a personal side how interest rates can impact, talk a little bit about how it can impact the district. We are seeing an increase in short-term interest rates specifically. A lot of that is driven by activities at the Federal Open Market Committee, as they are the entity that sets the federal funds rate. Most recently, on March 16th, they did increase their target rate from 0 to 0.25% range up to a new range of 0.25% to 0.50%. In addition, they are planning to have another meeting this week, and the general market consensus is that there will likely be another 0.5% increase to that targeted range, likely bringing it up to a range of 0.75% to 1%. There are also anticipated continuing increases for the remainder of the year. The market believes that those will continue to drive short-term rates up. So we see not only short-term rates that have increased due to actual actions that have been taken by the FOMC, but we also see short-term rates have increased because of expectations of what the FOMC is going to do at future subsequent meetings this year. We have been anticipating that there would be a gradual increase in market rates, and we are monitoring that closely. What that means for the district is our investment portfolio, we use a laddered structure where we have periodic maturities of investments that we use to fund our cash needs, things like operations and our capital spending program. We also typically have some amounts that we can reinvest in the market. As investments mature off, we are able to take advantage of either rising or, in some cases, declining market rates. The laddered structure creates a lot of stability in our earnings. So no matter what is occurring in the market, we don't have large swings in our investment earnings. It's kind of the same concept between hedging power sales. We're not really trying to get the best rates we can get in the market. We are trying to avoid the worst rates we can get in the market. And what ends up happening is we tend to end up somewhere in the middle. Over time, we have, again, much more stable earnings that allows us better forecasting clarity and better planning. The changes we're anticipating seeing in the near term also impact the district when we, as I said, when we go to reinvest. Currently, we actually aren't reinvesting very much because we are utilizing a lot of our investment maturities to pay for our large capital program. So while we are getting some benefit of short-term interest rates that have risen, we aren't getting as much as maybe we would have in prior years because we're not reinvesting as frequently. Instead, we're drawing down our cash balances as we use them on those capital projects. Another impact that interest rates do have on the district is on our debt portfolio side. Short-term rates tend not to affect the district very much on our interest cost side, because we do have the majority of our bond portfolio in long-term fixed rate debt. So movements in the market tend not to have a significant immediate impact. We do have some variable rate bonds, a small amount, approximately $40 million, that are impacted by short-term rates. And those rates do tend to move with the federal funds rate. We have seen some slight increases over the last few months, and we do anticipate we will continue to see increases in those rates for the remainder of the year. Those are included in our forecasts, and as those rates increase, again, we do receive higher earnings on our investment portfolio, creating more of a stable net interest cost. The question was asked earlier what the district expects its annual interest expense to be. Currently, long-term debt is forecasted to have approximately $18 million of interest cost this year. We also have some additional components of our debt portfolio where we are amortizing certain costs over the life of the bonds. That actually will end up bringing down that net interest cost to about $14 million for the year. And then when we net that with our interest earnings that are anticipated of about $10 million a year, the projected result for 2022 is around a $4 million net interest expense. That can actually be seen in the appendix of the financial update. There's a graphic on, I believe it is page 35 of this presentation, that shows the quarterly results that we have had back to 2012 on both our interest expense, our interest income, and the net result. And really what we're trying to do is manage that net result as much as we can so that we have a stable overall result for the district. Is there any questions I can answer at this time?
Great presentation, Heather. Heather, I think you also picked up some, you answered some questions from that Gary had. Do we have any other questions that we didn't get answered from earlier? All right.
If I may, I did want to check in with Commissioner Smith. I believe you asked about the level of anticipated new debt over the next few years. Dave,
I think that was Commissioner Bowles, but that's all right.
Oh, thank you.
I'll take credit.
Commissioner Bowles, I think I have your answer. We do in our forecasting approach, as Dave explained, we forecast an annual amount to ensure that we're balancing all of our financial metrics, and those help us find that, what's that right middle ground for how much to finance of our capital improvements and how much to utilize cash. And on our forecasting annually, starting in 2023, it's $35 million, as Dave mentioned, and it goes as high as about $70 million in 25 and 26 to balance that use of cash with the ambitious capital program we have for reinvesting in our assets. And what would likely turn out on that, as mentioned, is we would probably do multi-year debt issues to cover that for a few years for efficiency, manage the cost of issuance. So, you know, I would guess our new debt issues would be in the $100 million plus range each time we actually did go out to issue new bonds. So hopefully that helps answer that question too.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly and Heather. Rebecca, can you bring the presentation back up for a minute and go back a couple pages from where we were?
How far back?
Right there is perfect. Oh. Yeah, Brett Hammond was kind enough to give me the answer that Kelly just gave you also. So just wanted to just note one other thing, that this debt outstanding at the bottom of the page here that shows the expected case, that includes the borrowing that Kelly described. So as you can see, our borrowing is forecasted to be going down over that time period, our overall debt outstanding, I should say, even with that forecasted new borrowing. The $76 million or so that's forecasted through 2026 is included in those numbers that show as we continue to pay on our normal schedule of existing debt that we would actually still be reducing our overall debt that time frame.
You're actually making me happier, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to
and
clarify.
I can understand why I was confused with Randy. You know, we look a lot alike and yeah.
My apologies.
Thank you guys. Appreciate it very much.
You guys do have a similar hairdo.
Hey.
Okay, so
sorry,
Mark.
I couldn't help it.
Mark, no, Dave, Heather, and Kelly, thank you for a great presentation. Commissioners, I'm just going to stop for just a minute and go back. Was there anything else that you had asked that we didn't get answered that we need to get answered down the road? Great job, staff, answering questions. Heather, it's nice to see you in your new role, and congratulations on that. And team, thank you for a great presentation today.
And just a compliment. You know, reflecting back on the length of term in office that several of us have experienced, the management of debt, the projection and management of debt is just so different. When we were $1.06 billion in debt, and it was stacked differently and seemed like an endless cycle. And I guess just my compliment to everyone who's been involved in the investment, the development of our different sales portfolios, and everything that's made it possible to be where we are and manageable. And it's been a huge team effort from a lot of angles. And from this commissioner's heart of hearts, just so much appreciation. Around 16 years ago on the opposition to the debt that we had, and it's nice with everyone's support to be able to have fulfilled, you know, that part of a promise and a commitment. And without your diligence, I wouldn't be able to do that. And so thank you very much. I appreciate it tremendously.
Great. Thank you, Dennis. Commissioners, anything else? Again, Mark, Dave, Heather, Kelly, thank you very much. Nice presentation.
And I just wanted to pause for just a second here. Did Dave have any additional closing comments on the financial update?
I think we've covered it well. I don't think we need anything. I wouldn't mind putting in one more plug just to remind you there is an appendix with some really nice financial numbers in there. And if you have a chance to look through that and have any additional questions, I'm happy to answer those at a, you know, through an email or any other time. but I think we've covered the presentation. So thank you. Thank you, Heather.
Thanks, Steve. All right. Kirk, let's move on to item number five. Oh, Anne, did you have something?
Just make a comment. I just wanted to say thank you for the appendix. I always appreciate the financial highlights. That really helps me to kind of bring it all together. So appreciate it. Thanks.
Great.
Good. Thank you.
Okay, Kirk, let's move on to item number five.
Okay, item number five is our quarterly electrical load growth update. And with us in the boardroom is Andy Wendell. And we've got also Jim Graves, who's a substation wireman foreman, and Brian Lau, the substation superintendent. Andy?
Thank you, Gert. Good morning, commissioners. This is the quarterly electric load update. And the guests, Jim Grave and Brian Lowe, who are in the room today, as Kirk had introduced, are going to share a little bit of information with us about the recent commissioning of OMI substation, which is a great milestone for the district. We'll bring them in at the tail end of the presentation. So why we're here today, we'll go over the 2022 new services and meter installations to date. We'll talk about growth in 22 and what our load forecast looks like moving forward this year, as well as the 10-year forecast. Talk a little bit about developments from a countywide perspective. And as always, give you an update on our substation build statuses. And as mentioned, a big celebration today for commissioning the new OMI substation. No action is requested today, but we always like to get your feedback. So this slide shows meters installed, new meters installed going back to 2017 each year. Residential is in the blue. The green is the new commercial meter installations, and the tan or orange is industrial installations. So for 2022, we're about par with where we were last year, with just under 200 new residential meters installed, as well as 16 new commercial meters. No industrials at this point in time, but we are forecasting for 2022 to be north of 1,000 new meter installations, in line with the two previous years. Here's the 10-year load forecast, and we published a forecast in October 2021 at 1.4% for a base case, a total of around 31 average megawatts over the next 10-year horizon. We have not changed that forecast, and it remains solid. One thing that I would add in this particular view is that this 10-year load forecast is net of energy conservation. So we do have a gross number of just a little bit over 2% for load growth. And due to a couple of things, but primarily our aggressive energy conservation programs, we're able to bring that percent growth down to about 1.4% each year. Developments countywide. This particular view is the MEND development property up in Leavenworth, just adjacent to the Chumstick Highway. And as you can see, there's a few phases in there, but primarily multifamily housing in that particular area. We do have a substation planned just directly east on the other side of the Chumstick Highway, relatively adjacent to this development. But this is much of a trend that we see today, whereas in the past we might have seen more single-family homes on properties of this nature. We're seeing a big shift to multifamily units. This particular property would house somewhere north of 240 units or new meter points. So I thought it was a good opportunity to take a look at what our countywide new developments look like. This is a three-year view forward, and all of the developments that you see are in shade circle here, and the number of units in that shaded circle is there in white. And you can see that, of course, development is happening in Leavenworth and Wenatchee, Eniat, Chelan, and Cashmere. There's both large and small developments occurring. These particular developments are ones that we've actually received new applications on, and we're working through that particular phase in those applications, some of them under construction, some of them under design and estimated and review. Total right now is just under 3,600, but we're also seeing indications of many, many more in the conceptual phases. These would be conversations with municipal and county leaders, planning and development community, prior to them submitting an application to Chelan County. So I think the message or the takeaway here is that we're seeing sustained growth in new residential development across all of our municipalities and the county, and we anticipate that well into the future, the 3 to 5 year view. This information, of course, helps us tremendously in our planning for new infrastructure as well. And in fact, I just animated on there. You can see them pop up on the screen. Those are the most active substations that we're currently working on, whether they're under construction or design or property acquisition. Those seven substations you can see are in or directly adjacent to a lot of that new growth. Here's the countywide substation planning view. The yellow lines are our transmission network. The gray rectangular shapes are existing substations. Today we have 35 in service. The orange substations are substations that we're very active in working on, design or construction, that we do have properties for. You can see those are North Shore, Eniat, Bavarian in Leavenworth, as well as Castle Rock and the West Wenatchee rebuild. And then the red squares and the darker font there are substations that we are seeing in our planning horizon and we're actively seeking properties for at this particular time. So a lot of activity going on with new substations. Here's the list on won't go through each one of them, but the top three there are North Shore Substation. As you know, we're wrapping up our community outreach on that, as well as Bavarian Substation. Both of those you can see in the second column. The anticipated need from those from a load growth standpoint is in 2023. So we are constructing just in time for both of those substations. And then we have the Wenatchee substation, which is basically a rehabilitation and increase in transformer size on Wenatchee sub. In the third column is where we have properties acquired. And you can see there's a few of those in later years that we do not have property acquired. The substation that we are working very diligently on acquiring a site is the West Wenatchee substation. And we're actively evaluating multiple properties and, in addition, keeping our eyes and ears open for other ones that we have not identified at this point in time. And then in the last column over there is just gives an indication of whether new transmission lines would be associated with that. So as an example, the Bavarian substation in Leavenworth does require a material amount of new transmission line to come in and provide a feed into that new substation. Moving on, the build activities, some specific tasks that we're working on. Again, as I mentioned, OMI substation was energized, brought into service, and we now have customer load on that. That was completed in March of 2022. North Shore in Lake Chelan, we're wrapping up our outreach. We anticipate having that completed in the month of May. And the Bavarian substation in Leavenworth, there's community outreach as well as significant civil design going on up there. And we should be able to wrap much of that up in the third and fourth quarter of 2022. Upsizing of the existing Wenatchee substation down on Worthen Street, finalizing a project plan this year, as well as the Foothills Wenatchee site acquisition, we hope to have something nailed down in 2022 as well. And as growth and expansion continues in the Malaga area through the egg community as well as new residential homes, we see a need to develop a substation in that area between Malaga and what I would say South Wenatchee, kind of in that Stamilt region. So we're active there as well. Of course, these dates are subject to change based on load growth and new development. So in summary, I'd like to wrap up by saying the new construction and redevelopment here in the county remains strong. The primary focus on multifamily housing and residential construction, as well as a strong growth period for new commercials such as hotels and schools, that type of nature. A sustained growth for the next 3 to 5 years. Our electrical investments, meaning substations, transmission lines, and upgrades to our distribution infrastructure, are very, very timely. Our confidence level around these load growth is increasing all the time as we continue to partner with our municipal leaders as well as the county planning and economic development growth sectors. And the district's positioning very well to meet the demand that we're seeing in the next 10-year forecast. Okay, so I want to shift gears now, and what you see there on the screen is the new substation we call OMI substation. It's located out on the Highway 97A in the old station area. It looks like that the substation is mirrored because we generally just see one power transformer and one control building, but in fact this is the first of a new standard dual footprint substation. A traditional substation would be 28 MVA or 28 megawatts of capacity. This particular station brings a total of 56 megawatts of capacity into that old station area. And right in the center of the whole thing was Jim Graves. Jim is in a leadership role. He's a substation foreman, and we were blessed to have Jim navigate through this new standard and new substation commissioning. Jim's focus was on a lot of things, but the themes that I heard was a very strong focus on safety, on quality craftsmanship, leadership of people, both contractors and district crews, and a big emphasis on problem resolutions. So this equipment might not look like much, but there was a tremendous amount of problems that came up during this commissioning and construction, and Jim was right in the middle of leading through and taking action on resolutions. So wanted to give Jim an opportunity to introduce himself and talk a little bit about his experience with commissioning of OMI Sub.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm James Graves. I'm the distribution substation foreman, wireman foreman. Have any questions for me? No? Okay, I'll go into it just a little bit. I've never really spoke in front of the board before, so OMI substation was kind of a flagship for us. We had a lot of people involved in designing this, trying to bring us up to speed with future substation design so that we could have a standard that we could build to and have a very reliable type of setup that would be safe with the arc flash equipment, redundancy in the control houses with everything being designed the same. Thank you for your kind words, Andy. I'm not very good at speaking in front of group functions like this, so I'm very proud of this substation. There's a lot of people that were involved in building it. Everybody from the people above me who gave me the power and ability to go forward and try to resolve issues and build this so that it could be a model for future substations. We had a lot of issues building it, where the contractor was a new contractor for us. During COVID, they had issues with finding enough people to come in and build the substation. We worked hand in glove with them to try to help them to build the substation properly. There were some issues, nothing really major, but things that we had to resolve. We did, and in the end, we came out with a very nice substation that we can all be proud of. A lot of people worked on it. That picture there that you're looking at is me sitting there trying to figure out how to adjust a brand new switch that we've got. Those are Seco switches, and the engineers that designed those switches for us, they're an off-the-shelf item, but they build blueprints and design the switches to work in our situation. And when we got up to adjust them and do final commissioning on them, we discovered that they had made some mistakes in their geometry of their switches. So trying to adjust them turned out to be quite a challenge. And another one of the challenges during this sub was we had a couple of our distribution substation engineers who left the district right about the time we were starting this job. So some of the support and things that we would have where somebody could get in and help me answer questions, other people had to step up and try to help resolve those issues. And we came through quite well in the end. Everything got adjusted. The Seco manufacturer was really good to work with. They had made some mistakes. They resolved those issues, sent changes that I could build to, and in the end, we got everything adjusted properly and fired up the substation with no issues. Everything went as planned, and very happy with the whole thing. So, yeah.
I was fortunate enough to go out to the site and visit with Jim and Brian. And Jim, I think one of the things the board would be really interested in is how you describe the features from a safety standpoint on the control house and being able to remove a circuit breaker within the building and actually get it out of the way and have space to do so compared to other substations on our system. I think that'd be really interesting to the board.
Yes, the equipment is all arc flash rated. So as you can see on the doors on that picture, that's the outdoor tie switches. If you look closely, you can see bolts all around those doors, and the equipment is designed to where when the person is doing the switching, if something was to go wrong, a fault occurs or some piece of equipment fails and there's a large arc flash, the arc flash will vent out near the top of the building over the heads of whoever's working and be directed upwards. It's very safe. It can handle pretty much an explosion. Both the houses are built exactly the same. Internally, working on the feeder breakers themselves, racking them out, we have remote racking where those are also on the other side arc flash rated, but we also have a device that we plug into the front of the breaker, and then we can get quite a ways away and stand out of the hazard zone and remote rack those breakers out into the disconnected position so that we can take them out of service and do maintenance on them. We have redundancies built into the station service. Both control houses can carry each other independently. So if something went wrong over in house one, house two could carry 100% of the load for house one. We could switch everything over safely with all that arc flash equipment and do our work, and the customers never even realized we had an issue because we were able to switch it and work on it. And then in a non-emergency type of setup, just doing maintenance, we can carry the load with both houses. We can take a transformer offline and do maintenance on it, which we do every 5 years, and do all that without the customer ever even realizing there's been a glitch in their power. We don't have to bring the mobile sub in here to do that work. It's a really well-designed substation, and safety is really key in the design. Secondary would be the redundancy of everything, and there's really a lot going on with it as far as having everything being designed in a consistent and similar manner to where when you walk into one substation and you do something, there are no surprises. Everything works the same way. And if we can continue down that road with consistency in our future substations, that will really help us to have a really reliable system, a safe and reliable system that people can work on. And, you know, we can take a lot of pride in this. This is the district really got good value for their money. And then that was my job, was to make sure that we got what we paid for. And in the end, we did. So, very proud of it. Any questions for me?
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah.
This is Steve McKenna. Jim, thanks. First of all, thank you for all your hard work. For me, it was fun to drive by that periodically and look at the progress. So I'm sure you take great pride seeing a project like that through completion and gives you a lot of pride. The question I had, on those large switches out in the yard, and this will show my ignorance, those, and I forgot the term that you used on those the geometry of those big switches, but how do those lift up? How do you disconnect that current and reconnect it? Is that all done hydraulically, or can you explain that to me?
Yeah, those are called an MOD. They're a motor-operated disconnect, and electrically they operate off of our DC system. So if there was a fault, the switch that's just behind me, like towards the transformer, is a circuit switcher. The other one on the other side.
This one?
Nope, the other way, towards the big power transformer. That one has contacts in it, so if there's a fault, the bottles open and break the arc, and then the arms, there's big long arms that open up and make a large visible opening. And the other switches, the one I'm working on there, those either have bottles or whips to break the arc, but they're disconnect switches so that when we get in there and work on things, we can open that up. And there's a couple different ways they can operate. They can operate off of SCADA, so system ops can open them. We can put them in local, and I can operate them remotely, or you can go right up to them and open them locally down below, pushing a button. We try not to do that. It's better to be a little farther away when you open those things. They are safe, and they do break the arc, but it's better to be farther away in case something does go wrong. But
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Commissioners, any further questions? Gary.
Jim, I just want to let you know that I am in total awe and appreciate what it is that you do for us. My dad was with the IBEW, and so is my uncle. And my uncle specialized in working on nuclear power stations. So I've got a little bit, but just not enough to really do much more than really truly appreciate what you do. I understand both the danger, and I understand the complexity, and I can admire really good work when I see it, and I see good work being done here. So thank you for everything that you do, and thank you for the crew that you work with for making this power station a reality and taking pride in what it is that you do. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your kind words. I feel like the big danger for me right now is this microphone. So this isn't something I normally do. I'm way more comfortable working on a switch, dealing with contractors. I do want to give a shout out to all the people that were involved in this, the technicians, the wiremen, the CSE, the people above us who designed this and approved the spending the money to build it and buy the equipment. So it's a team effort. It took it took a village to build this, and it's something we can all be proud of.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Great presentation. Any other questions? Dennis.
Yeah, the illustration that just popped up is exactly what I would like to talk about just a little bit. I receive more phone calls, conversations regarding the concern. People drive out Western, they see the dirt work, they turn up School Street in Sunny Slope, they see the plywood, you know, they go over Skyline, they see the new apartment buildings. There's construction everywhere. And the comment that comes up time and time and time again, genuine concern, is are we going to have enough power to meet our local needs? And it seems like to me that perhaps we could extend our public relations and reach out in various ways to assure the public that local load is about 20% of what it is we do, and that there's more than adequate power, you know, into the future to meet the need, the growth that's here. But it is an absolute dead serious conversation. Where are my rates going to go up? Is there going to be enough power? Is the PUD planning ahead? And so my concern is, my answer to that is yes, we're aware of all of that. Great crews, great plans in place, things moving in the right direction. But perhaps maybe a sustained campaign for a while to reassure our ratepayers that they are going to be well taken care of into the future with adequate power and the most wonderful rates in the nation. So that's my, I guess, my concern. And Jim, nice work on the home station. I would be as uncomfortable in that switchyard as you are with a microphone.
Thank you.
Glad you're there, and I'm glad I'm here. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Commissioner Bulls, I just want to add, Commissioner Bulls, your input was great. I think that's a great takeaway. We have an outreach team that's very focused on community outreach with individual substations. I think it's a wonderful time to pause, look at the forest through the trees, and think about a countywide communication. So I'll partner with our communications group and our outreach group and strategize about how we can develop a sustained message on just what you spoke about.
Yeah, Andy, thank you so much. Yeah, it's just such a genuine concern. And it's not daily, but it's pretty close. Things are just so visual right now. And it's beyond what we have seen in the past. And I appreciate your willingness to take a look at that.
Great. Andy, I have one last question for you, and then I need to move on to item number 6. You had mentioned, and you had it up on the screen, the MEND project. And I've missed that in the news if they're moving forward with it. But can you explain that to me? Are they, is this building onto their additional property, or is the closed event that MEND had, the closed project that they had, back on? Can you update me on that?
Yeah, I'll have to get a few more details for you. My understanding coming out of our engineering group is that this is a revitalization of the property itself, the MEND property itself that we saw 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And under a new strategy, under some new direction. But my understanding is it is moving forward, and what we see, or what I showed on the screen, was a phased approach, and we're very active in designing and estimating that initial phase as well as a future phase. One thing to note on this is that, again, as I mentioned, our substation property is directly east of the MEND property. And similar to the original design, we would move power through this property, a distribution feeder through this property, to serve not only the MEND property and the houses here, but also other other existing and future development within the city of Leavenworth west of this property.
Great. Okay, well, I've got some catch-up to do on that. So, and that's directly across from where our substation's going in. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It's west from our substation, yeah. Which is at the corner.
Great.
Of, yeah.
I've got some catch-up work to do. Okay. Thank you, you very bet. Much. All right, well, without any further questions, I'm going to move us on into item number 6. I don't see any other questions. And at this time, I'd just like to introduce with a couple of comments. First of all, I just want to share to the public that we sincerely appreciate the City of Wenatchee's responsiveness to our questions and comments about Confluence Parkway throughout this entire process. We value our relationship with the City of Wenatchee and appreciate the City making their noise study consultant available to us to respond to any inquiries that we have to meet and discuss future findings. The third point I want to make is that the Horan Natural Area, Apple Capitol Loop Trail, and the Confluence State Park are all beloved community treasures, and we want to make sure that our decision as commissioners is well informed. And I want to really emphasize that. The PUD district does not have a noise consultant expert on staff, and we are going to utilize an independent consultant for our due diligence work as we move forward. And I've asked to have a standing agenda on every one of our meetings moving forward to help us advance this discussion and be responsive to the city's desire for clarity and ultimately a decision. So with that, today our discussion item is going to be presented by Michelle Smith, and so Michelle, I'd like to introduce you and welcome you and let you go ahead and get started.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
All right, good, thank you. So Michelle Smith, Director of Hydro Licensing, and today I'm bringing forward this draft scope of work for independent review and study of noise impacts associated with the City of Wenatchee's proposed Confluence Parkway project. This effort is in response to the board's furthered due diligence through augmented public outreach and review of the proposed environmental impacts and mitigation measures to ensure protection of the public recreation resources that are part of our FERC license obligations. The board expressed the desire for this work and to participate in the development of its scope. So we're here today. This is, wanted to let you know, this is staff's suggested outline for the scope of work that we're going to be going over. And I appreciate any feedback you have, and we'll continue to work with the consultant to finalize this scope of work after we get your feedback. I'll wrap up today by going over the anticipated schedule for the effort. And I believe that's slide 5. So moving on to slide 3, the purpose, Commissioner McKenna and I have stated this, but I think it's worth just going over it again, that we are proposing this noise review slash study basically to supplement the existing noise study performed by the City of Wenatchee's contractor under their environmental process for the Confluence Parkway. That is part of the Federal Highway Administration and the Washington State DOT and the City of Wenatchee's efforts to go through this environmental NEPA process for the proposed Confluence Parkway project. Our due diligence here is understanding the project design, the impacts, and to, quite frankly, get assurance that the mitigation measures that are being proposed that are important to support our future comments on the draft environmental assessment and the draft Section 4F analysis, which we anticipate we'll be providing our comments on those later this fall. In addition, this work will support our description in our potential future Rock Island License Amendment related to the adequacy and recreation of the recreation environmental protections. Knowing and understanding all of the impacts, making sure we're comfortable and confident in the descriptions, in the mitigation measures, and how that will protect our recreation resources that are part of our license will all play an important role in our descriptions and how we're writing this potential future amendment that we know is coming, is necessary to accommodate the exchange of land required for the project and also the changes to our recreation plan. Those all require Federal Energy Regulatory Commission approval. I also wanted to make sure that everyone is aware that we are not the only ones reviewing noise as part of this NEPA process. There's also a separate regulatory process going on under the NEPA process. Under the Endangered Species Act, the federal fishery agencies are looking at all the impacts, which potentially could also consider noise impacts during the construction phases of the project, especially in the Wenatchee River. And then also under Section 4F, the tribes are reviewing this project for impacts of cultural resources, which also could include noise. And then also under Section 106 with the Washington State Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservations, that process could also entail a look at noise and the impacts to those areas. So important to note that we're looking at noise very carefully, but others are too. So those are all part of the typical consultations that would be looked at in a project like this. So jumping to the scope of work, the outline that we've put together for this, I'm going to run through them, and then what I'd like to do is leave the rest of the discussion to get your feedback on these. The number one being that we want the consultant to be looking at the design proposal. We want them to review the noise impacts and proposed mitigation, and also the assumptions that were used in the modeling for the noise study. We gave some examples there that we know are part of the those assumptions, which include traffic volumes, the speed limits, ratio of cars to trucks, what is considered in the noise for vehicles, and we had an example such as engine exhaust as being one of those vehicle noise assumptions that we'd like to know more about. The second item is to identify the data and analysis that that is appropriate for completing a comprehensive noise study, especially as it pertains to Chelan PUD's responsibilities under Section 4F and our federal energy regulatory license obligations for the Rock Island Hydro Project. We will have the consultant then develop and present a work plan if there's any gaps that need to be followed up on. So they would give us hopefully a report if they find some efforts that some more study that might be helpful to us, put together a work plan for how we might go about that work and complete that additional analysis if it's needed. And then number four, importantly here, is making sure that the that we identify any other measures that could be deployed to help reduce noise, those noise impacts to the recreation resources and recreational uses and the wildlife areas there in the Haran Natural Area. So making sure that we're meeting our license obligations and, again, assuming that at some point we may have to provide a description of all of these things in a FERC amendment filed for this project. And then just note, I don't think we have to say it again, but we will be interfacing with the city, also the DOT and Federal Highway and the city's noise consultant as needed, as we need to look at the modeling, and we're asking the consultant to work closely on those items. We may need some help from them. And we're also assuming that there will be some site visits with PUD staff. And if requested, the commissioners would be welcome to attend those as well. So with that, I'll stop and see if there's any thoughts, recommendations, feedback that you'd like to provide at this time.
Commissioners, any comments to the scope of the work?
You see my hand?
Oh, sorry, Ann. I took my glasses off. I apologize.
That's okay. Go ahead, Ann. Thank you. So, Michelle, you are just the right person to ask this question, I believe. Could you bring that last sheet up again, Michelle? Those five items? Draft scope of work, correct, yeah. Okay, so number four, identify measures to reduce noise. So here's my question. To ensure PUD's license obligations for environmental and recreational uses are protected and or enhanced. So my question are there guidelines? How is that measured? I mean, how can we say, yes, our environmental and recreational uses are protected and or enhanced? What's the measurement device? I mean, it seems really subjective. And I know that the city has done a lot of work on mitigation, and they feel that these things have been mitigated. From my perspective, they're not mitigated to the point where our environmental and recreation uses are protected. So does FERC have standards, or can they describe those standards for us that have to be met?
Yeah, you're bringing up a really great question, Commissioner. And I'll first maybe start out by explaining that the way we're thinking of this is it's kind of like looking at our FERC obligations is almost like looking through a different lens. So, you know, when Federal Highway and DOT and the city are looking at this project, they're doing studies and looking at through the lens of a highway project or a roadway project. Mm-hmm. And looking and using all of the guidelines and standards that DOT or Federal Highway or others would be, you know, using. Your question, does FERC have a standard? Does FERC have a different way of, you know, how do we know what's appropriate? And it is subjective. Unfortunately, there's not a place we can go and say, oh, they require XYZ. But I think what we have to go back to is the when we look at impacts, in a FERC relicensing, or we look at impacts to our recreation resources as we look at the obligations we have for the purpose, you know, the reason why we have recreation resources, we're going to be looking at it more or less through that lens. And again, it is somewhat subjective, but we're going to be looking at is the user experience going to be impacted? Well, we're assuming it will be. There's going to be a roadway there where there wasn't before. We think that the noise mitigation that's being proposed and all the feedback we're getting from the public on noise, we feel like the mitigation is probably okay for, you know, based on the study. But we're not quite sure because we're not noise experts. We don't typically do noise studies because we don't have roadway projects like this. So we need some help looking at it through this separate lens, which is, is the proposed design, is the proposed mitigation, are there proposed assumptions that are going in the study, do they make sense when we're, for the lens that we're trying to look at, which is how are we protecting the recreation use and the recreation resources, which are basically, we're mitigation as part of our license, right, putting a park there, trails in there, the natural area, which is, you know, we're trying to preserve that experience as well. And the camping. So those are uses. So we're going to have to try and get to a point where we feel comfortable that we feel that the mitigation reduces as much as it can those kinds of impacts, balancing the fact that this roadway is an important infrastructure need for reducing traffic congestion on Wenatchee Avenue. So we understand kind of that balance of we know there's going to be some impacts, but we want to make sure that the proposed mitigation, that we're not missing something, that maybe there's something in terms of the assumptions that maybe wasn't recognized properly. So we're asking this consultant who we know will have the 4F expertise, they'll have the FERC license expertise, they'll have a noise consultant or a noise trying to look at analyst that will help us look at this in more of this comprehensive way. And I hope I'm answering your question, Commissioner. If not, ask it further.
Yeah, thank you. No, I like what you said. We're looking at it from through a different lens. Absolutely. I mean, we have a role as commissioners of the PUD. We have an obligation to protect our assets. And so that's where we're coming from. And I understand the city is trying to do everything they can to mitigate. But to protect our assets and or enhance our assets, that's a big ask. And we need to take this more from such a subjective place to more objective where we can define this. I did hear one commissioner say when they get ready to take their walk in the morning, they get in their car and they drive over to, I think they have to drive to the trail along the High Line because they don't like walking along the road because of the exhaust fumes. So, you know, that's not part of the noise study, but that certainly affects the recreational experience, not just for wildlife, but for people. I sometimes have to ride my bike on the main highway. I don't want to. I want to take the back roads, or I don't want to walk along the highway. So, you know, that's where. So I just wanted to remind everybody. I heard that comment, and that was a good one from one of the commissioners. We need a way to better define whether or not we are protecting, meeting the obligations of our license in terms of not affecting, protecting the recreational and environmental assets. I don't know. I rambled on a lot. Does that help, Michelle? What help you understand what I'm looking for?
It does. And I, you know, the purpose of this effort we're going through right now is, you know, first what we have to do is we have to really understand what the impacts are. And then we can, and in order to really understand the studied impacts, I think what we're trying to do is really make sure we understand the assumptions, right, that went into a model that gave us the information that was then used to design the noise mitigation. So we're just wanting to validate that. And then the next step would be, okay, going, I think where you're going with this, Commissioner Congdon, is, you know, how do we define those protections? You know, how do we define it? How do we make sure, you know, we come up with the right criteria? And I believe that's going to be something that as we're looking at the study results and how the study was put together and we look at the impacts, we'll start to get a better idea of whether the mitigation for those impacts, whether we agree or believe that they will be enough, right, to mitigate those stated impacts. And right now what we don't know, because we're not experts in this area, is we don't know are the proposals all there is, or is there something different we should be looking at or asking, or, you know, to reduce those impacts. So we just kind of want to get a better sense for, you know, is this it in the mitigation? Are we done talking about mitigation for noise, or is there some more additional information we need, or are there additional measures that we should be asking for? Ultimately, that's where we want to be.
Yes.
Very good. Go ahead, Ann.
Noise and exhaust fumes and, you know, the overall recreational experience for people and animals, the impact to them. Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, Sam. Anybody else?
Yes. Yeah, and Michelle, along with what Commissioner Congdon is talking about, I think in the sense of fairness, in a discussion I had with Justin Erickson this week, you know, I think when we're looking at, you know, if we're going to be measuring sound, again, I'm going to go back to walking on Western Avenue because it's a similar size of street, traffic patterns, speed limits, etc. If I'm walking on a stretch of Western, where there's no stop signs or stop lights. The hum of the traffic, regardless of the vehicle, is fairly consistent, and I don't like it, but it's not obnoxious. Get near an intersection where people are departing, and the exhaust noise is extensively different. And so I guess what I'm looking for, it looks like to me, in that whole segment of Confluence Parkway that will transverse our properties, there's no signals. And so, you know, I would like, you know, part of the consideration, you know, to look at that differential, just in a sense of fairness. And I don't want a consultant that's going to find information on our behalf. You know, I want a study done that provides us the data we need as a commission to make a decision. And I want that consulting work to be done fair, conscientiously, unbiased, and just give me the numbers. Just the facts, Jack. So does that help?
Yes, it does. It really does.
Okay.
And I do want to say, yeah, Commissioner Bolts, I think that was well said. And, you know, the consideration of no signals, no stop signs is in itself somewhat of the mitigation that the city is saying will reduce noise. And that is part of the, one of the assumptions, right, that is part of the noise study. So definitely that would be considered as an example.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. Gary?
Thank you, Steve. Dennis, that really makes a great deal of sense, and you're absolutely accurate that the hum of steady traffic tends to be less annoying, certainly less frightening as you're walking nearby. But I wonder, the one question I have, and Michelle, and I don't know the answer to this, and this might be something that you could pose or could discover, is that once the highway is built, are there any restrictions with respect to, you know, future stop signs, future stop lights, you know, changing the demeanor of the highway? I just don't know the answer to that. So perhaps you can dive into that for us.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'll put that on the list. Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. So do we have any other questions? Is there a nod to staff that they're in the right direction here? Keep plugging forward.
Commissioner McKenna, I might just ask, just for clarity, I heard a request to include exhaust as well. Just want to check with the full board whether we want to include that in the scope here, too.
Kirk, I maybe we should put that slide back up again, because I think the slide did say engine... number one, engine/exhaust. So I think it was part of the scope already.
Yeah, I was thinking it was more along the lines of noise than anything rather than the environmental impact, but maybe I was misinterpreting that.
So I can add that exhaust, and I think where Commissioner Congdon was pointing out, you know, the fumes, that is done in a separate study. So there is an air quality study where the exhaust and fumes, you know, during construction and for the ongoing purposes of the roadway were studied. And so if it would be helpful, we can, you know, we can go back and dive into that some more. And the state and federal wildlife agency. So we've had meetings with them to bring this the design and the proposed mitigation, as well as all the study results. We've been meeting with the those agencies as part of the city's work to continue the environmental assessment. So they have had a peek at this as well in terms of air quality. I just wanted to let you know that that is a separate study, and maybe there's some additional information we can ask related to that study, or maybe bring a summary of that to the board's attention if you'd like us to do it that way. I don't know if exhaust would be part of a noise element,
right,
other than the sound of it, but from a fumes air quality perspective, that would be a separate study, but definitely something that's being looked at.
Something to tie in there. Anne, further question or comment?
Thank you. Yeah, so Michelle, I thought I had read everything, and there's a lot. I appreciate you sending out all the information, but I don't remember reading other than just a very cursory comment about exhaust fumes, not related to noise, just the environmental impact of exhaust. Mm-hmm. Is there some place I should go to find that?
Let me go find the references, and I can send them to the board following this meeting.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for all your work on this, Michelle.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay. Great presentation on the scope of the work, Michelle. And I think that what I'm hearing from my fellow commissioners is to continue moving forward with that, and the scope looks good. Unless I'm hearing something different, Commissioner, I think that's the direction we're giving staff. All right, got a thumbs up. Michelle, thank you again. And Kirk, at this time, we've got about 10 minutes. Do you want to dive into some of your items before we break for lunch at noon, or are we ready to break?
Well, I do
see... Do you have time
to
get into some of yours?
Well, I do see one of our senior team members on that had one. If Brett Bickford is available, we could cover one of the manager items.
Yes, Kirk, I'm here.
Okay. Are you you had some guests, though, didn't you, for this manager item?
I did have some guests
okay.
That I don't believe have joined yet.
Let's just let's put that off then until this afternoon. So I think from my perspective, that concludes the morning session, Commissioner.
Okay. Mona. Great. Well, let's recess at this time for lunch. We will be back at 1 p.m. And thanks to all the staff. Great presentations this morning. Lots of great information and work that's gone into that. We'll see everybody at 1 p.m. Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to the May 2nd, 2022 business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission meeting. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices that you have with you today. Mute your screens. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand this way or electronically on your screen if you wish to address any item on the agenda. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. So, commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I would move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
All those in favor of the consent agenda signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes. Kirk, would you like to present regular agenda resolution number 10, please?
Yep, I'd be happy to. Agenda item number 10 is a resolution rejecting the bid of Arrow Concrete and Asphalt Specialties, LLC, and authorizing the district wide sport court maintenance be obtained by negotiation that's rejecting the bid 22-12065. With us is Travis Tucker to explain the situation.
Thank you, Kirk. Yeah, my name is Travis Tucker, construction manager for the Engineering and Project Management Group. And I want to share with you a little bit about the district-wide sport court maintenance project, which addresses failing court surfaces at Chelan Falls, Daroga State Park, Lincoln Rock State Park, Wenatchee Confluence State Park, Walla Walla Point Park, and Kirby Billingsley. The project also serves improvements to incorporate 18 pickleball courts to serve a growing public interest. These multiple projects were packaged into a single small works bid with an engineer's estimate of $220,000. This was based on quotes received for a portion of the work in previous years. The work is specialized with a limited bid pool and includes materials that have seen sharp price increases. On April 14th, a single bid was received in the amount of $847,500, exceeding the engineer's estimate by more than 15%. District staff recommends rejecting all bids and negotiating a contract rather than rebidding for the following reasons. Rebidding the project is unlikely to produce a different result from the original bid, as there are a limited number of regional contractors who perform this type of work. There are three known regional contractors that install sport courts that will be reached out to for negotiations. The failing condition of some sport courts are becoming a safety concern that requires swift action. Negotiating directly with contractors will provide additional expertise in evaluating value engineering options, adjusting district schedule constraints, and potentially reducing project scope. The project priorities will be determined by outreach efforts with stakeholders. The goal of negotiating will be to perform the highest priority repair work this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Travis. Any questions for Travis? All right. Commissioners, is there a motion to accept resolution number 10?
I would make a motion to accept resolution number 10.
I'll second the motion.
Any discussion? All those in favor of the motion on resolution number 10 signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Travis.
Thank you.
All right. Commissioners, resolution number 11. Based upon customer feedback, we've looked at several options to transition Schedule 36. I would personally like to thank staff for taking our feedback and providing us several options for consideration. Based upon your feedback, a revised option is before us to consider. Commissioners, how would you like to proceed? Proceed, not proceed. We can do this with a motion, make a different motion. How would you like to move forward?
Commissioner, would it be helpful if I describe the resolution for you?
Certainly.
Thanks. So I guess for the record, this is Eric Walquist, General Counsel. Commissioner, the Resolution 11 is a draft resolution that is intended to really accomplish two things. First, begin to call the question. You know, all of you, because we've been engaged in the conversation for some time now, that we are thinking through, I would say, options to transition our existing Rate 35 contract customers to Schedule 36. Part of that conversation, as Commissioner McKenna has suggested, has been a range of options for consideration of the board, ranging from 1 year to 3 year with variations within those options. We have, staff has, as part of the conversations that we've had with the board, I'll say gleaned, for lack of a better word, the consensus that at least we have felt around the option 2B, and that is something we've talked about several times with the board, and I know that there may still be discussions amongst the board or preferences to be ironed out. The intent of drafting and proposing this resolution, though, is really to facilitate that conversation. I would say that in furtherance of the feedback received from the board, staff has prepared and forwarded for initial review to our existing Rate 35 contract customers a draft transition contract that would be reflective of the 2B option at present. That is actually something that the board shouldn't feel bound by. Those are relatively easy, I say, because Charles is here over my right shoulder in the room, and Lindsay, I'm sure, is also poised to draft, but we can make adjustments to those contracts, commissioners, to the terms of those as appropriate. So don't feel pressure as a board, but we do need to call the question at some point. So that was the intent of introducing this resolution, is to facilitate that conversation. And again, it is presently drafted to reflect the 2B option, which is the two-year transition by way of summary that would have a one-third step up in this year and a one-third step up in the second year, and then in the third year, those customers would be at the full then Rate 36 charge. The second objective in introducing this resolution, the court has probably seen that it does purport to delegate signature authority to Kirk as the general manager. Because these are contract rates, the board does have to act. The board can act on each individual contract should it be inclined to do so, but really the terms for all customers will be identical, so seemed efficient that as long as we get the option right, which carries the pricing, the rest of the general terms and conditions are pretty straightforward, and those can be delegated for signature by Kirk once the board decides the right option that we should proceed with. So happy to answer questions. I do know that in terms of subject matter expertise, Lindsay is available and Charles is also available if the board has any questions of them. Otherwise, I'll leave it to the board's discussion. Of course, the board is free to act or not today. Staff is prepared to take whatever feedback or next step the board believes is appropriate.
Okay. Ann, you have your hand raised.
Let me unmute. Yeah, so Steve, you asked how we want to proceed, and I'm not sure how the rest of the commissioners want to proceed with this, but I cannot support the resolution as presented. I'm happy to wait. If someone moves to adopt this resolution, I'm happy to wait until the discussion period, you know, if we want to follow Robert's rules to the letter. So however you guys want to handle this.
So, you know, if someone feels strongly that we need to continue to discuss this, we don't, if there's no motion and it's not seconded, we're not making a decision today. We could make a motion on the resolution as presented, or Eric, help me with this. If someone wanted to make a motion with a change, what would be the process for us to do that?
Sure, Commissioner, thanks for that question. I think you're right in all respects. You could certainly simply talk about the matter. It is appropriate for discussion. If there's other informal, non-action related guidance the board would like to provide staff. Certainly if there's a commissioner who believes that this resolution is reflective of at least their position, certainly a motion could be made, seconded, and discussion and a vote could ensue with all of the appropriate sub-motions and amendments that might follow. Also feel, Commissioner, as though we don't have to act on this resolution, and certainly someone could make a motion really of any nature, including, I'm just going to say hypothetically, directing staff to prepare a resolution reflective of one of the other transition options that have been presented. You'll recall that there were one-year, two-year, and three-year options that were presented, and we can help the board with that if necessary. And of course, again, there's not, at least from staff's perspective, an immediate need to make the decision today. So happy to help further if there are other questions, but any of those paths forward would be appropriate.
Dennis?
I think it's totally appropriate, even before there's a motion on the table, to hear excuse me, what any commissioner would like to say about this particular draft proposal, and let that weigh in to any thoughts or deliberations that we may have. And so I would encourage Commissioner Condon to share with us her thoughts, and let us take a look at those.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so I cannot support the resolution as proposed. A one-year transition, that is a 50% or 50% of the positive difference between the current Schedule 35 and the Schedule 36 energy charge, commencing June 1 of 22, and then the second step up, which would be another 50%, June 1 of 2023, is what I would support. I had been calling that a two-year transition, so that was a bit confusing for everybody else. But so I guess it's kind of semantics, but I guess that would be a one-year transition, and that's what I, as one commissioner, will support. That's based on feedback from many, many, many customers. In fact, I will tell you that I did not have a single customer who felt that we should transition at all from Schedule 35 to 36. In other words, just make that one step into the new schedule. So with that, I'll leave that to the rest of you.
Thanks, Ann.
Thank you.
So, to my fellow commissioners, do you want to continue to discuss this? Does somebody want to make a motion for the current way it's worded? Do you want to come back next meeting with two different options and study what Anna's talked about? Give me some guidance on how you would like to proceed. As my fellow commissioner Randy would call soak time, I'm seeing soak time on your faces. Would you like to put this off a meeting, or are you ready to move forward? Gary, thank you for raising your hand, Gary.
Thank you, Steve. So, Ann, I would like to explore a little bit more deeply what Ann was suggesting. Ann, can you describe it maybe in better detail, or what you were suggesting?
Yes, I will. And I haven't been clear before, obviously. However, you know, this is just one commissioner's opinion, but however, based on a lot of feedback. So this is really what I'm proposing, is a one-year transition. I was calling it a two-year transition because it would take 2 years for it to, actually finally go into effect. But a one-year transition, Gary, so instead of a one-third step up on June 1, 2022, it would be a one-half step up, a 50% step up in terms of the you know, positive difference in the rate. And then in June 1 of 2023 would be the other 50%, the second step up. And then we would be at that point, we would be at the Schedule 36 rate. So the only difference in the resolution, the only difference change that I, as one commissioner, would like to see would be instead of one-third step-ups, that would be a one-half step-up. Does that help?
It does. Thank you. And I'm looking at my fellow commissioners to see if they would prefer soak time as well.
Dennis?
Yeah, just a thought. And, you know, I would like to say to Ann that, you know, I've had some feedback similar to what you're alluding to, but I've also had other feedback that kind of traditionally the position that the board has taken in this type of a situation is to hear from our business community in terms of what would be important to them. And I'm thinking, you know, and probably about 12 years ago, in a meeting at the Roaster at the top of the Coast Hotel was a meeting when we were looking at rate changes. And we had about 20, 22 business leaders in that meeting. And their statement to us at that time was they understood the need for, you know, potential rate increase. The only thing they asked for was some transition time to make adjustments in their business plan to respond to that rate, potential rate increase in a more business-friendly format. In terms of what I'm saying is to give them an opportunity to, it was difficult for them to make an adjustment when their business plans have been set for a year, you know, the current year that they were working in, and they asked for additional time to be able to transition their business plan to accommodate the request that we most likely were going to make. And at that time, the sentiment, and I believe the direction of the board, was to provide for that transition time. And so I guess where I fall is that seemed like a reasonable opportunity for people in our business community then. I don't feel a particular motivation to alter that perspective. I would like to see a little bit longer opportunity for our business people who this will directly affect to give them the opportunity to adjust their, to live within their current budget as much as they can, and then have some planning time for adjustment you know, for the next year. So that would be my thinking. And I just kind of wanted to get that on the table so that, you know, there's not an agenda that I would have that would come up at a different time. I think it's appropriate to state that opinion, you know, currently in light of where we are. So that's my dog in the fight. Thank you.
Since we are kind of opening this up for comments prior to a motion being made, I will open it up to anybody, including the public, for comment at this time. Malachi?
Thank you, Commissioner. Malachi Salcedo, 615 North Wenatchee Avenue. Thank you for your time and consideration. You received an email from me recently Just outlining, actually going the opposite direction of what Commissioner Condon is proposing, actually giving a little more time for transition. I'm trying really hard to provide independently verifiable fact-based information so that commissioners and staff can make informed decisions based on our position as the vast majority of your crypto load in the county. That would include really a pause and just a thank you to Kirk and senior management staff for making the time to come out last week and tour our Cashmere location that we call Horizon Data, as well as the Beta Hatch development that's next door. And it just, that was a blessing to have them make the time to come see both of those developments, innovative ag and emerging data next door in a former juicing facility. But the point for this discussion is you no longer have to take my word for the fact that there's an innovative heat recapture that is also the primary heating source for the neighboring data center. That's real and independently verified by staff, and got to tour around with Dr. Emery, the founder of Beta Hatch. So that's on the table. Also, I provided for you in a prior email independent institutional analysis of the crypto industry in general. So it's no longer the early emerging Wild West of cryptocurrency. There are over 60 publicly traded companies, specifically in the cryptocurrency mining industry. So we've got a lot of, as you know, when you have public entities in a space, you get a lot of independently verifiable information. Important details to pull out of that study, if you hadn't noticed them, were one, average cost all in is 4 cents per kilowatt hour for that group. And the study also talked about normalized margins. So that helps to independently verify what the largest public entities, our competitors in the space, are paying for effective average cost for power, and also that margins are normalized. So sometimes there's this impression that we're just out there making money hand over fist, but we're much more like oil, as I've mentioned previously. Make a lot of money occasionally and lose a lot of money sometimes, and you're averaging a normal profit margin as you operate efficiently. So that extension I requested is based on our actual need, and I've tried really hard to stay out of the BSer category with you over many years and always back up what I'm asking for and be reasonable and be straightforward with you. So that request for the additional year on each of A, B, and C in Section 7.1.1, that's what I need to continue to operate and stay functional. We've actually foregone profits, aka operated pretty inefficiently to help our neighbor at that particular location there in Cashmere really dial in their heat recapture, because we just think that's the better, more important thing for us to be doing. So when I put my proposal to you in email format, that's what I need to stay functional. I'm not asking for more or less. And my request is that you take very seriously, take serious consideration of what action you take, because staff can now confirm firsthand that if we have to shut down that site because the costs are too out of bounds for profitability or loss, actually, that's a significant negative impact on a company that's just getting their very innovative at-scale operations going. And they can also, staff can also test, there's not a ready backup heat source. I mean, we've really done this together. It's innovative, it's a good design, but it doesn't account for us having to shut down unexpectedly because of a roughly 200% increase in power prices. So thanks for hearing me, and thank you, commissioners, for letting me go over my 3 minutes.
Commissioners, this is Eric. I will offer that if it does help, I would say staff is not opposed to putting this resolution off 2 weeks, and I'm happy to resend you, if you think that would be valuable, any of the materials previously sent to you to see the impacts of those different transmission options, transition options again. I would say that the option that Commissioner Congdon has introduced is option 3B.
We've got it. We actually can pull it up on the screen here from the March 21 presentation.
There you go. So this particular slide does describe the various options. You see option 2 second bullet, which is what we'll call, if you could just put little A's and B's for each bullet, first and second under each option. It says that option B under the second one there, that's the proposal that is presently out and reflected in this resolution. Option 3B is the 50% transition that Commissioner Congdon has described. And then there is additional information that, of course, we have that shows the varying financial impacts of each of those options over the transition period to the district. So all of those things are available if the court or if the, well, there's the lawyer in me, if the board thinks that would be helpful.
Okay, do we have any other questions or comments from anybody? We do not have a motion on the floor.
Steve?
Randy?
Hearing that, even though it hasn't been a lot of discussion today, the fact that there's still some uncertainty, I would like a little more time to really focus in and study this through, and would be more prepared to make a decision in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Commissioners, I would almost take that as a motion of how to proceed. Are Dennis, Ann, Gary, are you comfortable with what Randy is suggesting? Okay, yes from Ann. Yes from Gary. So that's three, that's four. So we will put this off until our next meeting. Do we have any directions for Kirk and Eric to kind of re-summarize everything, a little more detail, or re-present the detail that's been presented to us, give us some additional soak time, and we'll come back to this at our next meeting. Ann?
Thanks, Steve. Question on how to proceed with this. Maybe we need to get a consensus from the other commissioners on this. Should we come back with two options when we meet again in 2 weeks, or are we going to come back with the same proposed motion and then figure out how to handle it from there?
So, commissioners, maybe I can help with that. So, there's first of all, let me just back up and say, if there's anything at all that we can provide on from staff's perspective to the board, any or all of you, to help you make that decision, please don't hesitate to reach out to me anytime, and we will get that put together. We will work independently on trying to put a short summary together, just to recapture the conversation and the options with financial impacts for you. In terms of the resolution proper, that is actually a bit less concerning to me once we know which option the board prefers, because the resolution can be drafted modified in very, very short order. So I don't know that it's absolutely necessary that we have the resolution that would be up or down presented to you, but I will work to have a draft resolution that is available for your review in advance, and then be prepared in sort of real time, as we've done occasionally in the past, to scribe on that resolution so that we can have it reflect, if a decision comes, precisely what that decision is. And we will put we'll put an appropriate resolution with the board packet out to the public, and we will in some fashion indicate the blanks that would be filled in depending upon which of the options, either existing or creatively developed in the moment, that the board comes up with. I'm confident that we can draft that in real time for you.
Gary?
Thank you, Steve. Eric, one thing that might help the board is to revisit the original thought process when we initially implemented the new rate category. I think that might help to refresh in everyone's memory as to what the logic was in implementing it in the first place. And that might help also provide information to help us arrive at resolution going forward. Thanks, Eric.
Sure, Commissioner. Thank you. Just one point of clarification. The thought process that you're talking about relative to the implementation of adoption and implementation of Rate 36?
Yes.
Okay. So the best, yes, I'm happy to do that, Commissioner, and I'll have those materials sort of assembled for you. Probably the best, single point source would be the staff report for the adoption of Rate 36, which I will send you again so that it's at the top. We'll put that in with those materials so that you have them.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
You're right.
Ann?
Thanks, Steve. One last comment. So now that I'm really clear on what the options actually speak to, option 3A or 3B, according to the feedback that I received, would probably work from my perspective. And I don't know, for our cryptocurrency business folks, I don't know which would work better. 3A, of course, is nothing in 22 and then a full jump in 23, and option B is the one half jump in 22 and one half in 23. So either one of those I could support based on the feedback I've received.
So let me throw out an idea here. So we're directing staff to provide us additional information on all the different options for soak time, continuing our learning, taking any feedback. And I'm just throwing out an idea, suggestion. And Eric, you can tell me if, one, I'm doing anything against Robert's rules here. But to facilitate this as your president, my suggestion or idea, good or bad, would be that prior to our next board meeting, the Wednesday before the board meeting, you each will contact with me on what your preference is, and then a resolution will be presented to you for your consideration at the next meeting. And we vote it up or down, and then if it's voted down, then we go back to work. Yeah. So is that an appropriate direction?
So, commissioners, due respect, I'm going to submit to you that it's not, simply because that's, I think it could be constitute a serial vote. So they're, each commissioner is calling you to tell you what their vote would be. I would caution against that. But
I didn't say both. I just said their preference.
Right. So I would still be concerned. But what I can do is I will follow up personally with all of the commissioners and talk through any challenges. Though I will make time and make sure that we have all of that feedback. And then if there's anything that looks like a unresolved question or issue, Commissioner McKenna, maybe it's best that I reach out to you at that point, and we can discuss the right path forward.
Perfect.
But in terms of the resolution, the vast majority of the resolution is going to be the same. It really is the pricing terms in that section that changes. And as I said, I'm able to draft that in real time here as you make that decision, though. So wouldn't want you to be feel constrained actually to any of those options. If there's something out of the discussion that the board feels is more appropriate, I'm confident that I can draft that in real time for you.
Dennis?
Yeah, procedurally, you know, may I suggest that perhaps at our next meeting we have a resolution that has three options, and that if those options, particularly after a commissioner discussion, Eric, with you, are outlined pretty clearly, we can vote up or down on any one of those three options. I would be a little reluctant to concoct a motion on the fly. I would rather have three thought-out options available to us and allow us to discuss those. And at that point, if there's ambivalence, then I think we need to refine it even further. But if there's not ambivalence, I think we would have the opportunity to choose an option to move forward.
Yeah, so Commissioner, now you're forcing me to let you peek in the bag and say that my expectation was I will have all of those drafted and ready. So it will just be you telling me which one we're circulating for signature. So
it's always been my role to be a soothsayer, so thank you.
Yeah, I think we're loosely saying the same thing. The only difference is what I do to prepare beforehand. So
yeah.
And yes, I'm happy to share drafts of all of those, but effectively they are on that slide, and I will get those out to you. It likely won't be today, but in the next day or so, we'll get you a summary out of all of those, all of the information. It would be more of an assembling of the information already discussed and provided than additional information. But if there is any additional information that the board or any member would like, please let me know as soon as you can, and we'll be happy to find that.
Okay. We're good to go?
Thank you, Commissioners. I appreciate your discussion today.
All right. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, staff. Thank you, Malachi. And we'll continue our work. All right. We are now on to number 12, manager items. Kirk?
Yep. I've got three manager items, starting with Brett Bickford, who will give a brief update from the reliability compliance audit we just completed with the Western Electricity Coordinating Council. Brett, I think he's got a couple of guests online too.
Yes, good afternoon, Commissioners. Brett Bickford, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. And on the line, I have our Reliability Compliance Manager, Glenn Pruitt, as well as Director of Transmission and Compliance, Chad Bowman. And I wanted to share that we just completed our WEC audit. It's once every 3 years, and through the leadership of these two with a very large team of district staff, we're able to complete that audit with no findings. And so I'll let Glenn and Chad discuss a little bit more about that.
Apologize, I was muted there. This is Glenn Pruitt. Yes, this is the third WEC audit in a row that we've had no findings. WEC did make three formal positive comments and several informal positive comments. And overall, the WEC audit team was impressed with Chelan PD's culture of compliance, professionalism, and the internal controls in place. So a lot of hard work went into this by a lot of staff.
Just
definitely a team effort, lots of different standard owners across the organization that keep the district in compliance day in and day out, and every 3 years WEC stops by to check on us, and it's really impressive to see them, you know, recognize the effort that the team has put into this. And really that last positive observation in their slide deck to me is really heartening, that they see on both the, what they call the operations, maintenance, and planning standards and the critical infrastructure protection standards, that there is a high degree of cultural compliance coupled with operational excellence that yields these results. So super proud to be associated with this team. Appreciate all the help we've gotten from Kirk and the commission over the years to resource this program. So thank you for that.
I would just I would add the team here is being very humble, and this is no small feat. And just as a reminder, that these audits are different than the traditional audits where there's a sampling of things that are tested and looked at, where the standards are identified and then our team has to prove they're in compliance with each of the requirements, and there's evidence to show that we're in compliance with the requirements. And so this is a huge accomplishment to get here, and I know this team has worked really hard to embed compliance into everyday operations, and it was certainly recognized by the auditors that there was a strong culture of compliance, not one such that it was being prepared for an audit, but ingrained in what we do day in and day out. So just want to commend our team and just let you all know how proud I am of them.
Great. It was my, Ann, go ahead.
Thanks, Steve. I sat in on that that meeting, and I just want to say, Chad said he was very proud, as Kirk did. Boy, I was, bursting with pride, really. Every single auditor that spoke commended all of our staff there. Their hard work, their compliance with everything they were asked to do, and just the whole culture of compliance was applauded over and over and over. So, I mean, it just couldn't have been any better. I was just, I'm not supposed to be proud, but I was. So great work, everybody involved.
Thanks, Ann. I had the same experience. I this was my first WEC audit to sit in on as a board member, and I found it to be quite different than the typical audit that I would sit through at the state level, and it was just very very matter of fact. Each bullet was pointed out, the data was corroborated, and the comments were made, and it just went bang, 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 bang. It was like rapid fire, very, very positive comments for staff, great data, and I appreciated being there and listening to it. Same reaction that I had, that Ann had, just feeling very proud of our staff. So, very good. Thank you very much. Kirk, anything else on that?
Just check one more time to see if there's any other comments with the team members there. Nope. Okay.
I think the thing that it reminds me every time I go through that is how much work goes into preparing for an audit by staff. It's just, you're providing them a great, they're asking for a lot of information, a lot of data. You provide it, you spend hours doing it, and then you get back to work. And so it's just, anyway, but what you do know about an audit is that if you weren't doing the work before you started putting the data together, no matter what you said or what you did, you weren't going to pass. So it takes just consistent day in, day out work ongoing work by staff, working as a team, learning as an organization, and getting better all the time. And that was pointed out in the audit. So congratulations to everyone. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, team.
Thank you.
While we've got Chad here, I wanted to have him touch on joint line transmission project update. Chad?
Sure. Thank you, Kirk. Chad Bowman, Director of Transmission Compliance. Just wanted to provide you a short update on what we call the North Mid-Sea Joint Line Project. We've talked to you occasionally over the last decade or more about this project. I think the last time was probably at least 2 or 3 years ago, but construction is about to begin on that line. You may recall that Douglas is constructing it. It's funded by the three Mid-Sea PDs and BPA. Most of the construction is in Chelan County, even though Douglas is building it. Douglas does have all the land rights they need to construct it, the easements, the access agreements, things like that. The new line goes from roughly the railroad bridge down by Malaga south along all those other transmission lines past Alcoa, down to the Tarpiska, and then back across the river to EPA's Columbia substation. The four entities signed an agreement in 2012 to jointly fund this line, and it alleviates transmission congestion between Rocky Reach and Columbia, essentially. The current construction estimate is right about $18.5 million. Our share of that is about $4.5 million. And we're expecting energization sometime in the second half of next year. Douglas last Friday had a open house to talk about construction. I think Neil was at that meeting. I think he's got some readouts from that meeting to share with you as well.
Great. Thanks, Chad. Neil Naruto, Communications Manager. About 30 people attended the meeting on Friday, some contractors, primarily Pertit and Magnum Power, along with BPA, Alcoa, and the Colville Tribes. We also had one property owner attend the meeting as well. And they reviewed issues such as project timeline, permitting, access guidelines, safeguards for cultural and environmental issues, and the meeting schedule going forward. BPA also hired an archaeologist, and tribal members are on site in areas where any ground disturbance might take place. And special attention is also being paid to nest areas, one in the Rock Island area. There were no real concerns raised by any property owners other than just making sure that the access roads were returned to their normal condition after construction. So that was the gist of the meeting. Pretty standard, but some good questions about timeline and just the whole process.
Any questions for Chad or Neil?
Gary.
Thanks, Steve. Hi, Neil. Hey, you mentioned Alcoa attended the meeting. Is that correct? Did I hear you right?
They did, and I didn't really get a lot of input from them on their concerns. I think it was just the fact that they're adjacent to the transmission line itself, so no real comments from Alcoa at the meeting.
Okay, thanks.
I think this is just a reminder, because it has been a while, this is just a great example of the coordination that's happening through the transmission planning process, the regional transmission planning process, where a line like this can come together and have four public agencies allocating costs accordingly for the construction of a line.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chad and Neil.
Thank you.
And the last item I've got is I'd like to have Justin Erickson provide an update on the public power benefit solicitation process and a proposal for how to proceed reviewing the submitted projects from this point forward. Justin?
Thank you, Kirk. Good afternoon, commissioners. As you know, the public power benefit solicitation effort is underway, and district staff is beginning some preliminary evaluations of proposals in preparation for a June check-in that we have on the calendar with you. We actually have a soft deadline of May 1st for submissions, so this is all lining up just really well with how we anticipated it sequencing. The May 1st deadline is in place to ensure that we can incorporate projects into the 2023 budget and business planning process. And in this case, we also have some funding remaining from 2022. So as a reminder, we have about $700,000 remaining from 2022. And for 2023, after you take out commitments such as fiber, we have about $3.9 million in unallocated funding. So combined, we've got a fairly healthy allotment. And so it's exciting to be able to take a look at these projects that are coming in. Also, just wanted to remind you that you received some correspondence from Kelly Boyd in March regarding our annual review and analysis of PPP funding, consistent with our revised financial criteria that was put in place concurrent with the new strategic plan in 2020. And so based on that review, no modification is recommended to our allocation. We continue to meet our financial metrics, and so that $6 million allocation for 2023 can be sustained and will be incorporated into the next year's budget. So with that in mind, we've been contemplating how to review, evaluate, and present options and recommendations to the board. Because PPV is a strategic priority and connects to high-level policy discussions and decisions, we wanted to make sure that the board is involved at whatever desired level that you have. And so as I thought through this, and I had some brief correspondence with Commissioner McKenna, we thought this would be a good venue just to come to you and see if you have a preference and take comments. So one option that I think might have merit, and that would be, I think, somewhat new, is to utilize a subcommittee with one or two commissioners and district staff to review and shortlist the projects for presentation to the full board. Right now, we have about 20 submissions to evaluate, so the time commitment I think should be relatively modest. And of course, staff will try to do as much of the heavy lifting as we can. Alternatively, we can proceed with a more traditional approach with staff evaluation followed by formal recommendations made at one or more board meetings, and then of course adjustments made based on board feedback and direction. So recognize that there's a lot on everyone's plate, and certainly comfortable proceeding under either scenario. Just wanted to check in with the board, get your feedback, see if there was any interest in participating as part of a subcommittee, or if you want staff to charge ahead and come back to you here in a few weeks.
Commissioners, what's your preference? Does anybody want to volunteer, or do you want to just hand it off to staff? Anne, would you like, are you volunteering, or would you like to say something?
No, I better say something first. So, Justin, did I hear you say that if we just hand it off to staff, will you guys winnow it down to a smaller number and bring that to us?
What I would anticipate is that we would have some type of a ranked system where we would rank the projects, present you. We could certainly provide you a comprehensive snapshot of the entire submittal package, but that we would do a proposed, we would make a recommendation. And certainly at that time, you could dig in deeper on any of the ones that you wanted to, including those that we weren't recommending.
Yeah. Okay. So I'd like to see a couple commissioners be involved in that as well. And I will throw my name in there. I'll volunteer.
So is there consensus by the board to go ahead and get one or two commissioners on that to participate on that and move forward? Are you okay with that? Okay, I see head nods. And any more? Anyone else want to work on that? Saw Randy's thumb go up. Maybe he volunteered.
I did too.
Oh, he's adjusting his screen.
You did not get me volunteering. You
didn't get me.
I thought. I would, you know, the next couple of weeks for me are quite busy, and so I would not like to be one on them. I could go either way, but if Ann wants to do it, and if, you know, I'm sensing that Steve McKenna really does want to do it.
So absolutely. Okay, Justin, so you have two volunteers.
Oh. Wonderful. Look forward
Dennis,
to
now, wait a minute, Dennis, did I see your hand?
No. I was saying, take it away.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we'll move forward with that. Ann and I will participate.
But I can't think of two people better than Ann and Steve McKenna.
As long as your name's not on that list, right, Dennis? So, okay.
That helps. That helps.
Okay. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you very much.
That's all I've got.
Okay. Lisa, is she available to go over travel for Commissioner?
We are getting her now.
While we're waiting for Lisa, why don't we move into commission items? Does anybody have anything they want to share while we're waiting for Lisa?
She is here now. So.
Okay, so we're on to the next item. Hi, Lisa.
Hello, how are you?
Take it away.
Okay. So, Commissioner Travel, I have coming up May 22nd, Commissioners Arsenault and Commissioner Congdon traveling to Coeur d'Alene for NWPPA. And I have a note to check in with Commissioner McKenna. Do you plan on attending?
I will not be able to attend.
Okay. Thank you. In June, Commissioner Arsenault, I have a strategic planning committee for Waputa, but I can't find a date for that. Is that something you're...
Yes, and I can get you the date on that, Lisa.
Okay, so I'll keep that on here then. June 10 through 15, I have Commissioners Arsenault and Commissioner Smith traveling to Nashville for the APPA conference. And just want to make sure that Commissioner Bowles, Congdon, and McKenna aren't interested in that.
I'm going to have to get back with you, Lisa, now.
Okay. Commissioner Bowles? No?
No. Thank you.
Did you shake your head, Commissioner Congdon?
I'm a solid no.
Solid no. Thank you. Commissioner Congdon, how about the Water Committee in June?
Where is that's in June?
June 23rd.
Is that in Olympia?
You know, I didn't see a location on it. I wondered if it's...
You know what? Yeah, no, that I'll be attending virtually.
Okay.
The water workshop, I may be attending in person, which is usually in September. So, and that's going to be in Spokane.
Okay.
So that's the only other one I'll be attending in person.
September in Spokane. Oh, okay, in person. Thank you.
Thanks.
Can I mark everyone else off for the quarterly water committee?
Yes. Correct.
Okay. And then we have July Waputa meetings in Olympia. I have Commissioner Arsenault, attending in person. Anyone else plan to attend?
What are the dates?
July 13 through 15.
I will not be available.
Okay.
Virtual for Dennis.
I'm sorry.
And I'm not sure yet, Lisa. I'll get back to you on that one.
Okay. Commissioner Bowles, I missed that.
Virtual, please.
Okay.
If I might add, there's a possibility that that location might change.
Okay.
Laputa would like to hold that meeting in Wenatchee, but is looking for a hotel and a meeting space, and have finding difficulty finding that.
That would be nice.
So we'll keep everyone updated as more information is available.
Okay.
Is our meeting room out at Rock Island large enough, or are we able to do that, Kirk?
How many people do you estimate would be attending?
Could be 50.
We can certainly check. I know it'll present some logistical issues, but we can certainly check and see if that's an option.
Don't mean to put you on the spot, but if we can check and see if that.
Yeah. That's 2 days.
Thank you, Steve.
Over 2 days. Thought. Is that correct? Over 2 days?
13th through the 15th.
Yeah.
3 days, right?
Yeah.
3 days?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Lisa, I think that's probably far enough.
Okay. So let me know if there's anything else I can help with. And thank you for everyone turning in your expense books already. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks.
Okay, Kirk, follow up on delegation of action items from previous board meetings.
Yeah, we had two items to follow up on from previous board meeting. One of them was Justin Erickson following up with the city on Confluence Parkway outreach results, which was completed. Email was sent to you all around the 15th of April. Then the second one was for Justin and I to contract with a noise consultant to provide additional information on the proposed noise associated with proposed Confluence Parkway, and you heard the progress report on that earlier today.
Okay. Thank you. Delegation of action items from today.
We've got two of them identified, so please correct me if there were others that we might have missed. First one was for Michelle to share the city's environmental study on exhaust fumes for Confluence Parkway. And the second one was for Eric to provide the staff report on rate schedule 36 and any information that you would request along those lines in regards to the transition impacts.
And maybe third meeting space possibility.
Brand new one there. Look into, okay, we'll add that one. Look into meeting space options for the Wapuda July meeting.
Sam?
So I don't remember. Don't we need breakout rooms as well as one big meeting space? Wouldn't we also need a couple small breakout rooms?
We might be able to work around that, Ann. Thank you for checking on that. We would have to work with Wapuda to see if that would suffice. My largest concern, I guess, would be transportation. The commissioners would be staying probably at a hotel in the Wenatchee area, and they'd need transportation mm-hmm. after the hydro project. So not impossible, but just adds another issue that Wapuda would have to deal with.
Yeah, is the CTT, would that be an option?
I don't think they have a room large enough for 450.
Yeah,
they can, I think that depending on what might be reserved, they may be able to adjust some of those rooms to accommodate a group that size.
Might be
so?
Yeah, they could, if they have availability.
Because they do have breakout, they have small rooms where you could have breakout sessions.
We'll take away the item to look at some options there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Gary, we've also got plenty of schools in the area, and I'm sure we can come up with something. Okay.
Well, that would be great.
At this time, do we have any additional public comment? All right. Are there any matters, other matters of general business that may necessarily come before the commission today? Seeing none, we will be recessing into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 42.30.110. At this point, we will take a 10-minute break. It's 2:08.
For an hour, Kirk? How long?
I'd say 90 minutes.
For 90 minutes?
Yeah.
Sorry, Commissioner.
Take a 10-minute break and come back. We'll be in executive session for 90 minutes. Anything else? We are going, what's the word I'm looking for, Eric? We're
recessing.
We're going to recess.
Recessing. Let's go to recess. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We are coming out of executive session and need to extend our time and go back into executive session for 10 more minutes.
Thanks, Commissioner. Go ahead.
We are coming out of executive session at 3:56. It is Monday, May 2nd, 2022. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we stand adjourned.
Thank you.
See you, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.